Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in chapter 23 of Isaiah, which I will entitle an oracle concerning Tyre and Sidon. We start now in Isaiah 23, verse 1, as we are now in the midst of a series of oracles against surrounding political kingdoms of Israel. We started in Isaiah 15, and starting from there and coming up to where we are now, we see oracles against Moab, Damascus, Assyria, Cush, Ethiopia, Egypt, Babylon, Jerusalem itself, which is not a pagan nation around Jerusalem, of course, but an oracle against Jerusalem was thrown in, and now we take up an oracle concerning Tyre and Sidon, and the news is not good, coming from Isaiah. Next chapter, we're going to look at an oracle concerning everybody. So Isaiah's on a roll here. He starts in verse 1, an oracle concerning Tyre. Wail, O ships of Tarshish! For Tyre is destroyed and left without house or harbor. From the land of Cyprus word has come to them, come to the people of Tyre. Now Tyre consisted of two cities. Old Tyre was on the mainland. As Adam Clark says, that city was built 2,760 years before Christ. I don't know if his numbers are exactly right, but it's been there a long time, long before our 8th century B.C., where we are now in the times of Isaiah. Now, at some point, there was a city called New Tyre, which was an island out in the sea just off the coast of Old Tyre. It was finally annexed to the mainland by Alexander the Great in 332 B.C., which is a great story. It's well chronicled in ancient history. But we need to keep that distinction in mind as we go through some discussion of when this prophecy was fulfilled. Tyre was a daughter colony of Sidon. Sidon was about 20 miles north up the coast of the Mediterranean. Both of the cities were on the Mediterranean coast. Now Isaiah says in verse 1, wail, O ships of Tarshish. Why the ships of Tarshish? That's not Tyre. Well, first of all, where is Tarshish? Well, people don't know for sure, but everybody says it's probably Tartessus in Spain. They don't know exactly where that was, but it's said to be somewhere around the southwestern part of Spain, near the Atlantic coast, not the Mediterranean, but the Atlantic coast, right past the Rock of Gibraltar. And the reason it was probably mentioned was because it provided a lot of gold and silver to Tyre. Let me read from Wikipedia concerning Tartessus. Ancient region and town of the Guadalquivir River Valley in southwestern Spain, probably identical with the Tarshish mentioned in the Bible. It prospered from trade with the Phoenicians and Carthaginians. Remember, Tyre and Sidon are in the area called Phoenicia, and Tyre and Sidon got rich from trading all over the Mediterranean, and they established daughter colonies, one in Carthage, and so the people of Tartessus, which is probably Tarshish, traded with Carthage on the North African coast, and they also traded with Tyre and Sidon on the coast of the Levant. Wikipedia goes on to say that Tartessus was probably destroyed by the Carthaginians in about 500 B.C. The exact site of the town is not known, but archaeological evidence suggests it may have been near present-day Seville. Now, Tarshish is referred to as the ships of Tarshish, poetically, meaning the people of Tarshish. How did they find out that Tyre had gone down? Well, we see in the last part of verse 1, from the land of Cyprus, word has come to them, come to the people of Tarshish. Why Cyprus? Cyprus, of course, is an island right off the coast of Tyre and Sidon in the Mediterranean Sea. Here's what Adam Clark says, for the Tyrians, when they saw that they had no other means of escaping their destruction, they fled in their ships and took refuge in Carthage and in the islands of the Ionian and Aegean Sea. Now, those are the islands between Asia Minor, Turkey, and Greece. Cyprus is right before you get to those islands. So, naturally, the people of Tyre would flee to Cyprus, and then people in Cyprus would then pass the word on to Tarshish. Well, that's how the people of Tarshish found out about the destruction of Tyre. The next question is why would they wail about it? Why would they care? Why would they cry? Well, I think the answer is simple. They would lose a lot of trade with Tyre. Tyre was a commercial powerhouse at the time, and all of that carrying trade that the ships of Tarshish had, well, not just carrying trade, but they had a lot of gold in Tarshish, apparently. There was a lot of commerce that's going to be destroyed by the destruction of Tyre, and Tarshish is going to feel the economic pain. Now, notice for the purposes of our further discussion as to when this oracle was fulfilled, that Tyre is destroyed and left without house or harbor. That sounds like a total destruction of Tyre, and that's going to present problems with certain interpretations as we go on. So now, let's go to the question of when this prophecy was fulfilled. Now, this is a classic split of opinion amongst the learned commentators. I'm not sure who's right, but I'll give you the options. The two major options as to who destroyed Tyre are this. The first one is the Neo-Assyrian Empire, which ruled between 900 to 609 BC. The second major option is Babylon under Nebuchadnezzar II. He ruled from 605 to 562, about a half century or so after the end of the Assyrian Empire. Those are your two main options. Now, some people throw in Alexander the Great, who took Tyre in 332 BC. Some people even throw in the Persian Empire. Cyrus the Great conquered Persia in 539 when he beat the Babylonians. But that's an awful wall option. Alexander the Great is not held to by too many people. So our two main options are going to be Assyria and Babylonia as the perpetrators of this destruction on Tyre. Now, Ellicott believes with Assyria. We'll start with Assyria first. He says this, the mention of the Chaldeans as having been subdued by the Assyrians, that's in verse 13 in this chapter, which you will notice is backwards because it was the Babylonians who beat the Assyrians. 610, they took the Assyrian city of Nineveh, and then 609, they wiped out Haran, the last capital of the Assyrian Empire in Syria. They had fled to Syria, the Assyrian leadership had. And so it was the Babylonians whipping up on the Assyrians, but verse 13 in chapter 23 has the Assyrians whipping up on the Babylonians. So that presents a major problem. We'll discuss that further when we get to verse 13. But briefly here, this is what Ellicott says. He says there was one time when the Assyrians did beat the Babylonians, and that was when the Babylonian prince or governor of Babylonia. Babylonia was a province of Assyria at the time, and it was ruled by a man named Merodach-Baladan II. He ruled from 722 to 710. He tried to set up an independent kingdom in Babylon, and the Babylonians came under Sargon II and whipped him, took Babylonia back over. And so Ellicott says that this is entirely inapplicable to the time of Nebuchadnezzar, and this seems indeed to be decisive as to the question. Well, Ellicott mentions the other main option that most people hold to, I think, is the time of Babylon. So Ellicott's sure that we are referring to the destruction of Tyre by Assyria. Okay, well now, if that's the case, when did Assyria do it? Well, now we have some more trouble because we have three Assyrian kings who came in to beat Tyre. But the destruction of Tyre was supposed to be complete without house and harbor, so keep that in mind. The first possibility as to who this Assyrian king might be is Shalmaneser V. He ruled from 727 to 722. He besieged Tyre for 5 years, but he didn't take it. The Tyrians, with 12 ships, scattered Shalmaneser V's fleet and took 500 of Shalmaneser's men. That doesn't sound like Assyria whipping up on Babylonia. It also doesn't sound like it's referring to Assyria destroying Tyre. It sounds like vice versa. Tyre ran Shalmaneser V off. Remember, verse 1 says Tyre is destroyed. Isaiah prophesies. Well, there's no destruction of Tyre there. Well, before we look at another option, let's see what Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown has to say, quoting an ancient historian, Menander. He says that Menander the historian notices a siege of Tyre by Shalmaneser V, about the time of the siege of Samaria, in other words, around 722, when northern Israel went down. Sidon, Akko, that's Acre, and Old Tyre on the mainland were soon reduced, but New Tyre, on an island half a mile from the shore, held out for 5 years. Sargon probably finished the siege. Well, now, again, if you separate out New Tyre and Old Tyre did go down by Shalmaneser V. And Isaiah may have been referring to Old Tyre, not New Tyre, out in the ocean, in the sea, on the island. So Shalmaneser V might be an option. Now let's look at another Assyrian who came in to whip up on Tyre, Sennacherib, who ruled from 705 to 681. He defeated the aforesaid Merodach-Baladan of the Babylonian province in 703 BC, and he came down to attack the countries of Canaan, including Israel, including Jerusalem. Wiped out a bunch of cities in Israel. This is very famous. We'll get to that eventually as we go through Isaiah. Let me read to you what Wikipedia says about Sennacherib. Sennacherib, who ruled the Neo-Assyrian kingdom from 705 to 681, failed to conquer Tyre in his military campaigns, but Tyrian king Luli lost control over the territories outside the city and was forced to flee. But remember, Isaiah said Tyre was going to be destroyed, no house and harbor left, so that doesn't sound like Sennacherib destroyed Tyre to me. Well, let's look at another possible Assyrian king who came in, Esarhaddon, 681 to 669. He defeated Tyre and Sidon in 674 BC. Wikipedia says that Balu, who was the king of Tyre, apparently entered an alliance with Egyptian pharaoh Taharqa and was punished by Esarhaddon. Punished. I don't have any more information on how bad that was, but it is an option. Well, in my humble opinion, when you look at the kings of Assyria and what they did to Tyre, it doesn't really seem to me that they destroyed Tyre and left it without house or harbor. So let's go to the other main option, which is Babylonia under Nebuchadnezzar II. Now remember, Nebuchadnezzar II ruled from 605 to 562. If you recall, when he came down from the north past the Euphrates River on into Israel to besiege Jerusalem, he took it and fired it and destroyed it in 586 BC. He also sieged Tyre at the same time, started in 586, and for 13 years he tried to take the city from 586 to 573. Now, of course, he couldn't get New Tyre because it was out in the ocean, just like Shalmaneser V couldn't get New Tyre. So let me read what Wikipedia says. The siege of Tyre was waged by Nebuchadnezzar II of Babylon for 13 years from 586 to 573 BC. The siege of Tyre in Phoenicia has a significant connection to the book of Ezekiel, where it was mentioned that the city had fallen to Babylonian forces after a years-long siege. We'll get to that in Ezekiel. But remember, that's not New Tyre, that's Old Tyre. But I don't have a problem with this because Isaiah didn't say which Tyre it was. He could have very easily been referring to Old Tyre, and Nebuchadnezzar did a number on that. You can't besiege New Tyre for 13 years unless you have destroyed Old Tyre. Now, the commentator Albert Barnes says that it's Babylon who Isaiah is prophesying who's going to destroy Tyre so that it doesn't have a house or a harbor left. So does John Gill. So does Adam Clark. This is the majority view, so let me give you the majority view that the empire that's being referred to is Babylon. Now, I've already quoted from Wikipedia to give you a brief description of that siege of Nebuchadnezzar II of Tyre, but let me give you a further quote from Wikipedia. Nebuchadnezzar II in 605 BC started military campaigns in the Levant. The Tyrian rulers allied themselves with Egypt, the kingdoms of Judah, Edom, and Moab, as well as other Phoenician cities against the Neo-Babylonian ambitions for regional expansion. Well, that's natural. They, these allied kingdoms, succeeded in keeping their independence, except for Judah, of course, who got destroyed. In 586 BC, Nebuchadnezzar II started a siege of Tyre that went on for 13 years. It failed, but the weakened city eventually conceded to pay a tribute. Due to the long siege, Tyre had suffered economically, as its commercial activities were greatly damaged by the instability. Well, to me, that handles destroying it without house and harbor because it's referring to Old Tyre, just because he didn't get New Tyre out in the city. So I think that's not a problem. Now, Barnes agrees that it was Nebuchadnezzar II who was prophesying about this destruction of Tyre. He says, in holding that view, all commentators probably are agreed. So he claims a great majority view for the Babylonian view. He does mention Grotius, the famous international law expert who was also a commentator. Grotius supposes that it refers to Alexander the Great, which is another one of our options. We'll look at that in a minute. I don't think it's Alexander the Great. Now, I will remind you once more that the weakness of the Babylonian view is Isaiah 23:13. Look at the land of the Chaldeans, that's the Babylonians, a people who no longer exist. Assyria, destined it for desert creatures. They set up their siege towers and stripped its palaces. So there, it looks like Assyria is conquering Babylon, which means that Babylon is in no shape to be attacking Tyre. We're going to look at that in a minute. to try to get around this difficulty. But just for right now, most of the commentators believe it's Babylon. Now, some commentators believe it was two nations that attacked Tyre. In other words, a double fulfillment. I don't like double fulfillments. Complicates things. I have two commentators, Benson and Poole, who say that the attacking nations were Babylonia and Alexander the Great, both. Babylonia, starting in 586 BC, and Alexander the Great, who succeeded completely, New Tyre and Old Tyre, in 332 BC. Here's what Benson says. Although this prophecy first and more directly respects the former Babylonian destruction, yet it seems to have some reference to the latter, Alexander's. Also, that's too wishy-washy for me. Here's what Matthew Poole says. Although this prophecy seems directly and properly to respect the former Babylonian destruction, yet it seems to have some reference to the latter, Alexander's destruction also. Here's a rabbit trail. Those quotes are so close together, I thought I'd made a mistake. In citing them, I went back and looked at the two commentators, and they are almost word for word the same. There's a couple words difference. It reminds me when I was quoting people in term papers in high school and college, you always change a few words, you know, so it doesn't look like you're plagiarizing anybody. It looks to me like somebody was copying somebody back there in the 19th century. I don't know. All right, getting back to our task at hand. We notice that these two commentators, Benson and Poole, at least say that Babylonia partially fulfills the prophecy of Isaiah concerning the destruction of Tyre. We've got Gill, Clark, and Barnes who say that Babylon completely fulfills the prophecy. And in fact, Barnes says that almost all commentators think it's Babylon. So we're going to go with Babylon because I'm not skilled enough or brave enough to go against the majority view here. The Cambridge commentator says it was the Neo-Assyrian Empire. They back up Ellicott, who also says it's the Neo-Assyrian Empire. Now, as I said, there's some other options, maybe Persia, because they conquered the city in 539 BC, but they didn't destroy it, not that I know of. And then Alexander the Great, of course, he did destroy it in 332. But, as we'll see later on in this chapter, Isaiah also prophesied that after 70 years, the city's going to come back. That doesn't fit so well with Alexander the Great. I'm going to show you later that it does fit with Babylon. So, we're going with the majority opinion. Isaiah is talking about Babylon, destroying Tyre. House and harbor, we go to verse 2 of Isaiah 23. Be silent, you people of the island, and you merchants of Sidon, whom the seafarers have enriched. You people of the island could refer to Tyre itself. As I said, New Tyre sat on an island out in the Mediterranean Sea, off the coast of Old Tyre. That's John Gill's view, but it could refer to Cyprus, previously mentioned. It could refer to all the islands of the Mediterranean, depending on how you translate the verse. There's lots of islands in the Mediterranean. Think of the Aegean Islands, the Greek Islands, the Ionian Islands off the coast of Turkey, Asia Minor. But we'll just say it's Tyre. Be silent, Tyrians, and you merchants of Sidon, your mother city. The seafarers have enriched Sidon because Tyre traded with Sidon. Of course, they got rich together. We go now to Isaiah 23:3. On the great waters came the grain of the Shihor. The harvest of the Nile was the revenue of Tyre, and she became the marketplace of the nations. Now the Shihor is the Nile. It means blackness, and the Nile got the name Shihor because of the blackness of the Nile's waters. The Nile, of course, has its source down south in Ethiopia, and as it comes north on into Egypt, the water is charged with mud. We see the name Shihor mentioned in Jeremiah 2:18. And now what hast thou to do in the way to Egypt, to drink the waters of the Shihor? Referring to the Nile. The harvest of the Nile was the revenue of Tyre. In other words, Tyre traded with Egypt. They're not far apart. You get out the mouth of the Nile, you're right at the southeastern corner of the Mediterranean Sea, and just a little ways up the coast is Tyre. So they made a lot of money together, but no more. Tyre was the marketplace of the nations, but no more. Wiped out by the Babylonians. We go to Isaiah 23, verse 4. Isaiah continues, Be ashamed, O Sidon, and you, O fortress of the sea, for the sea has spoken. I have neither been in labor nor given birth. I have neither reared sons nor brought up daughters. Now, why would Sidon be ashamed? Well, Sidon was so close to Tyre that Tyre's fall could not but help affect Sidon, the trade. Sidon was not only close to Tyre in geography, but also in history. Remember, Sidon was the mother colony. Remember, Sidon was the mother city. Now, Isaiah mentions in verse 4, "And you, O fortress of the sea," that would be Tyre, because as Barnes says, quote, "Tyre on a rock might be regarded as the strong place or the defense of the Mediterranean." And then Isaiah says, "For the sea has spoken." Now, that's a little bit strange because seas don't usually speak. So let's see what might be referred to here. Here's a couple of options. "The seas that washed Tyre" could be said to be speaking poetically. As John Gill says, quote, "The sea itself, which now no more brought great numbers of young people to Tyre, children to be educated, young men to be instructed in trade and business, and virgins to be given in marriage, because Tyre has been shut down by the Babylonians because of that siege for 13 years. And so the sea is saying, I have neither been in labor nor given birth. There's no children to present to you, Tyre. I have neither reared sons nor brought up daughters. There's no traffic with you, Tyre, because you are wiped out." That's one option, that it's the water, the oceans, that are poetically speaking to Tyre with bad news. Another option is that it's New Tyre. New Tyre has spoken. As John Gill says, before, that island right off the coast of Old Tyre was very populous, full of children, young men, and maidens, but now it was desolate. Barnes says that New Tyre here is speaking as it were the sea, because it was surrounded by the sea. So if you look at it, New Tyre, you can hear New Tyre speaking, and New Tyre is surrounded by the sea, so that's just the same as saying the sea has spoken. Of course, all this is poetic, because a city can't speak any more than an ocean can. Another translation of this verse, Isaiah 23:4, gives a better idea of New Tyre speaking. That translation says, "Be ashamed, Sidon, because the stronghold by the sea has spoken." Not the sea has spoken, but the stronghold by the sea has spoken. That's the God's Word translation. "I've never been in labor or given birth." That sounds like New Tyre. And I suspect that that's what's being talked about. In fact, I mentioned fortress of the sea in the NIV translation. And I said Barnes says that Tyre was a fortress because it's on a rock defending the Mediterranean. Well, it could be the fortress of New Tyre, which was defending Tyre, that Isaiah is talking about. In fact, the more I look at this, I think that's what Isaiah was talking about. Bad news for the citizens of Tyre on the coastland of the Mediterranean in Old Tyre. No sons, no daughters, no future. Now that is probably poetic for the fact that now, because of the siege, Tyre, which had formerly sent out colonies abroad, like Carthage, and was a mother city to many cities along the coast of the Mediterranean, now is a mother to no cities because of the siege of Nebuchadnezzar. We go now to Isaiah 23, verses 5 through 9. Isaiah continues, "When word comes to Egypt, they will be in anguish at the report from Tyre. Cross over to Tarshish, wail, you people of the island. Is this your city of reverie, the old, old city whose feet have taken her to settle in far-off lands? Who planned this against Tyre, the bestower of crowns, whose merchants are princes, whose traders are renowned in the earth? The Lord Almighty planned it. So bring low the pride of all glory and to humble all who are renowned on the earth." First of all, in verse 5, Isaiah says that Egypt will be in anguish when they hear that Tyre is destroyed. Why? Well, couple of reasons why, optionally. One is the Egyptians might be fearing that their own turn would be next. Tyre gets wiped out, and then Egypt. Remember, all the little principalities of the Levant and Israel and Egypt, they all tended to band together against first Assyria and then Babylon, which is natural. They're trying to stop the beast from the east. They also could be in anguish because all that trade that Egypt was carrying on with Tyre has now been wiped out. In verse 6, Isaiah says, "Cross over to Tarshish." Well, cross over means flee. Flee to Tarshish, way out in the west on the coast of Spain. "Wail, you people of the island." Now, that's the NIV translation. The Holman Christian Study Bible has coastland. Who is supposed to flee to Tarshish? Well, you could say it's the New Tyre. They were an island separated from Old Tyre on the mainland. But I have a problem with that. New Tyre could be supplied from the sea, and in fact, that's why Nebuchadnezzar never was able to reduce New Tyre, because ships just kept coming in and supplying them. New Tyre couldn't get starved out. Alexander the Great had the same problem until he built his causeway, and so he could attack them over his causeway from the mainland. So I don't think that's what's being talked about here. It could be, come over and will you people of the islands of the Mediterranean. There's lots of them. There's Cyprus, there's Crete, there's the Aegean Islands, etc. All of these islands lost their trade with Tyre, and so time to flee to the west to go to Tarshish. The problem with that, though, is island is singular, at least in the NIV. You people of the island. I suspect the translators of the NIV thought it was the people of Tyre who were going to be fleeing. Well, one way you can solve that is just translate it as the Holman Christian Study Bible does. Wail, you people of the coastland, and that would mean all the islands of the Mediterranean, along the coast of the Mediterranean, all the port cities there that lost their trade with Tyre. In verse 7, Isaiah says, is this your city of revelry, the old, old city? Jigil says that Tyre was the most ancient city in Phoenicia, excepting for Sidon, of course, the mother city. Tyre was around in the times of Joshua, which of course is about 13th century B.C., 1200s B.C. We read in Joshua 19, verse 29, first part of the verse, then it turns at Ramah and goes on to the fortified city of Tyre. I think Joshua was talking about a boundary line that turned. Actually, even earlier than that, in Egyptian records in the 14th century B.C., the 1300s B.C., we find a mention of Tyre in Egyptian records. So Isaiah is quite accurate in calling Tyre the old, old city. Is this your city of revelry, because they were so prosperous, the old, old city, whose feet have taken her to settle in far-off land? This is referring to the Tyrians who had to walk to their places of exile, as opposed to riding in delicate horses and carriages. In verse 8, Isaiah says, who planned this against Tyre, the bestower of crowns? How is Tyre a bestower of crowns? Well, because behind every good king, there's a banker. There's money. You have to have money to rule the kingdom, and Tyre had enriched many of the kings of the earth with its money. So Tyre is a bestower of crowns, whose merchants are princes. Now that could be actual princes trading with Tyre, or it could be merchants who were so rich they might be called princes. It's not really clear, but the point is, there was a lot of prosperity that went down to the dirt when Tyre was invaded by Babylon. Tyre's traders are renowned in the earth. Of course, that's almost a mundane historical fact. Verse 9, the Lord Almighty planned it. Verse 8 was the rhetorical question, who planned this destruction of Tyre? And verse 9, the Lord Almighty planned it. To bring low the pride of all glory and to humble all who are renowned on the earth. God hates pride, especially when it's raised up against his glory and majesty, and he will judge it eventually. Now notice that the Lord planned this to not only bring low the pride of Tyre, but to bring low the pride of all glory and to humble all who are renowned on the earth. Tyre was to be an object lesson to people like Alexander the Great and Napoleon and Xi Jinping and Pol Pot and Joseph Stalin, Adolf Hitler, and all the other fools who think they're going to rule the world instead of God. We go now to Isaiah 23, verses 10 through 12. Isaiah continues, till your land is along the dial, O daughter of Tarshish, for you no longer have a harbor. The Lord has stretched out his hand over the sea and made its kingdoms tremble. He has given an order concerning Phoenicia that her fortresses be destroyed. He said, no more of your reveling, O virgin daughter of Sidon, now crushed. Up, cross over to Cyprus. Even there you will find no rest. Now at verse 10 in the NIV, Isaiah says, till your land, referring to the Tyrians. The idea is, since you no longer have a harbor, as Isaiah says in verse 10, it's destroyed, so you can't make your money trading on the Mediterranean Sea anymore, so you're going to have to go back to the mainland and start farming, just like they do in Egypt along the Nile. Now, most of the other versions I looked at it translated verse 10 the same as the NIV, the same as the NASB, which doesn't have till your land is along the Nile. The NASB has overflow your land like the Nile. Of course, the Nile River was famous for overflowing. And so the idea is, hey, you people of Tyre, start overflowing your boundaries and get out of Tyre. Go into exile as fast as you can, as swiftly as a river overflows its banks. Now, the Holman Christian Study Bible also translates it as the NASB, overflow your land, but they do put a note in there and note that the Septuagint translates that word as work. Work your land as along the Nile, which is the way the NIV takes it when they say till your land as along the Nile. Either way, you either go into exile or you quit trading on the sea and you go farm. Either way, you're cooked, O daughter of Tarshish. Now, what does this phrase, daughter of Tarshish, mean? Well, the daughter is the inferior to the mother. Tyre is now ruined, so now Tarshish will become the superior city, the mother city. Tarshish might be considered as the metropolis of the Tyrian people. Now, actually, in history, it was the other way around. Tarshish was actually the daughter city of Tyre, so the one city on the top has now come to be the city on the bottom. I don't know if Tyre actually established Tarshish, but Tarshish got rich because of Tyre. Tyre was obviously the superior city until this devastation happened by Nebuchadnezzar II. There's a close connection between a daughter and a mother, and so there was a close connection between Tarshish and Tyre, and so Tyre is called the daughter of Tarshish. So, daughter of Tarshish, you no longer have a harbor. Verse 11, the Lord has stretched out his hand over the sea. That's the Mediterranean Sea. God reaches over the Mediterranean Sea and grabs Tarshish by the neck. God has made the Mediterranean Sea's kingdoms tremble. And of course, the particular kingdoms that's being talked about here is Tyre. But all the other nations around are trembling too because they see Tyre go down. God has given an order concerning Phoenicia. Remember, Phoenicia is that part of the Mediterranean coast that's north of Israel. The lands there, the Levant, Tyre and Sidon, Phoenicia. God has given an order concerning Phoenicia that her fortresses be destroyed. And of course, I think that might refer to more than Tyre, because when Nebuchadnezzar came in, of course, he wiped out everybody around. I'm not aware of the details, but he wiped everybody out. So I assume that this is talking about more than Tyre. Verse 12, God says, no more of your reveling, O virgin daughter of Sidon. Well, Tyre is already called daughter of Tarshish, and now she's called the virgin daughter of Sidon because Sidon was the mother city that started Tyre. I don't know why she's called a virgin. It's an interesting question. Why is she called a virgin? Maybe because she's younger than Sidon, and therefore called not only a daughter, but a virgin daughter, like a young maiden. But at any rate, she's crushed. And then in the last part of verse 12, Isaiah says to the citizens of Tyre, cross over to Cyprus. Now remember, if you look at the map, Cyprus is right off the coast of Tyre. You have to go north a little bit. Cyprus is nestled right under the northeastern corner of the Mediterranean Sea. Cross over to Cyprus, but even there you will find no rest because Nebuchadnezzar's coming. He can get you on Cyprus. We go now to Isaiah 23, verses 13 through 17, and we will finish this chapter. Isaiah continues, look at the land of the Chaldeans. That, of course, is the Babylonians. Look at the land of the Chaldeans, a people who no longer exist. Assyria destined it for desert creatures. They set up their siege towers and stripped its palaces. They made it a ruin. Now, this is a key verse in the chapter. It's very difficult. It seems to cut across and cut against the idea that it's Babylon who is invading Tyre. Why? Because in verse 13, it seems to say that the Babylonians no longer exist. The land of the Chaldeans no longer exists because Assyria has destined it for creatures of the desert. Assyria has made Babylonian a desert. And then it says they set up their siege towers and stripped its palaces. It sounds like Assyria has wiped out Babylon. They made it a ruin. Assyria sounds like it's made Babylon a ruin. That, of course, is a monumental problem for the majority view that it's Babylon who is destroying Tyre. So we're going to have to deal with verse 13. Let me go ahead and read verses 14 through 17. Wail, ships of Tarshish, because your fortress is destroyed. On that day, Tyre will be forgotten for 70 years, the lifespan of one king. At the end of 70 years, what the song says about the prostitute will happen to Tyre. Pick up your lyre, stroll through the city. Prostitute forgotten by men? Play skillfully. Sing many a song, and you will be thought of again. And at the end of the 70 years, the Lord will restore Tyre, and she will go back into business, prostituting herself with all the kingdoms of the world on the face of the earth. Now, that section has a prophecy of Tyre coming back after 70 years, and we're going to have to tie that 70 years to Nebuchadnezzar. So that's one problem. And the other problem, of course, is verse 13, where it sounds like Babylon no longer exists and has been wiped out by Assyria. Now, in verse 13, Isaiah says, look at the land of the Chaldeans. Look at the land of the Babylonians. Well, if you hold to the view that it's the Assyrians who destroyed the Babylonian rebel Merodach-Baladan II in 703 BC. Well, actually, Merodach-Baladan was taken down twice by Assyria, 710 and 703 BC. Well, if you hold that view, then the people of Tyre will look at the Babylonians, see that the Babylonians have gone down and have been destroyed by Assyria, and know, therefore, that you too, Tyre, are going down by the Assyrians. That works if you hold to the Assyrian view of this prophecy. But now, if the occasion of the destruction of Tyre is Babylon coming in to destroy Tyre, then the reference in verse 13 would be, look at the land of the Chaldeans, look at the Babylonians, look at them directly, because they're coming to wipe you out. Now, let's deal with this verse 13, of people who no longer exist. Now, let me set the difficulty of it. This is what Joseph Benson says. This verse, in which there is much obscurity, will admit of different interpretations. Much obscurity. Well, we will rush in where angels fear to tread. Before we do, let me give you some background on the relationships between the Assyrian Empire and Babylon. Let me quote from worldhistory.org. Throughout the history of the Assyrian Empire, Babylon had caused problems and had even been destroyed by the Assyrian king Tukulti-Ninurta in circa 1225 BCE. Now, that's the original Babylonian Empire, the old one. The Babylon we've been talking about is the Neo-Babylonian Empire, started by Nebuchadnezzar II's father, Nabopolassar. You have to make that distinction. But if you go way, way back in the history, I don't know, back 2,000 years or so BC, Assyria was in existence, the old Assyrian Empire, and they, in fact, founded Babylon. Assyria was in the area of northern Iran or modern Iran, somewhere in that area. And if you go west and cross the Tigris River and you're in the Mesopotamian area, that's Babylon. So they were right next to each other, but Assyria had started Babylon, and Babylon was constantly revolting. Let me read from Britannica.com, and we're going to look at Merodach-Baladan's revolt. According to Assyrian accounts, Sargon marched south against Babylonia in 710. Sargon II of Assyria did that. After defeating the Elamites, those are the people of that country in southwestern Persia, old ancient kingdom, Sargon beat the Elamites and Merodach-Baladan's other allies. Merodach-Baladan, remember, is the Babylonian prince. Sargon then turned toward Babylon. Merodach-Baladan fled, and the leading citizens of Babylon brought Sargon unopposed into the city, where he officially became king of Babylon. The next year, Sargon captured and destroyed Merodach-Baladan's capital, Dur-Yakin. Now, this is from the Encyclopedia Britannica. So, that, according to the Assyrian view, according to the view that the Assyrians are who Isaiah is referring to as having destroyed Tyre, this is when you have a reversal. Instead of Babylon destroying Assyria, you have Assyria destroying Babylon because of that revolt of Merodach-Baladan of Babylonia. And that works pretty good. The only problem is when did the Assyrians come in and knock off Tyre? I gave you three possibilities, and they didn't seem very likely to me. The damage was too small. So now let's look at our problem. How did the Assyrians make Babylon of no account? Because that's what the verse says. Assyria is going to turn Babylon into a desert, strip its palaces, set up siege towers against Babylon, make it a ruin. Well, of course, the first option is to say that happened under the revolt of the Babylonian prince Merodach-Baladan II, as I just went through. Ellicott and Pulpit hold to that view, because they hold to the Assyrian view that it's Assyria who's coming in to wipe out Tyre. But the majority of the commentators say that, no, it's Babylon who came in to wipe out Tyre, starting in 586 BC with that 13-year siege. Well, how do you handle verse 13? Well, here's how you do it. I'm going to give you the Young's literal translation. I'm going to put a couple parentheses in there, which is legitimate because the text does not have parentheses, so we might have to add them. The translation is different, and it's going to refer to the fact not that Assyria destroyed Babylon, but rather that Assyria founded Babylon. So here it is, Isaiah 23:13 in the Young's literal translation, with parentheses added. Lo, the land of the Chaldeans. Parentheses, this people was not. Asher founded it for the Ze'im, which is inhabitants of the desert, as Barnes points out. So Asher founded it for the inhabitants of the desert. In other words, back when Babylon was established, they were living like people in a desert, like nomads, but then Asher made a city out of it. They raised its watchtowers, Assyria did. They lifted up her palaces, Assyria did, in parentheses. He, referring to Babylonia, hath appointed her, Tyre, for a ruin. Now that might be too hard to follow by listening, but if you look at it, it works perfectly. Let me read it again. Young's Literal Translation. Lo, the land of the Chaldeans. This people was not. Asher founded it for the inhabitants of the desert. They, the Assyrians, raised its, the Babylonians, watchtowers. They lifted up Babylon's palaces. Babylon has appointed Tyre for a ruin. They lifted up her palaces. Assyria lifted up Babylon's palaces. Close parentheses. Babylonia has appointed Tyre for a ruin. I've added in the proper nouns of the cities and empires instead of the pronouns. But all that makes sense. So we're going to stick with Babylon as the destroyer of Tyre. Now, in verse 15, we've got to deal with this. On that day, Tyre will be forgotten for 70 years. On the day of its destruction, in the time of its destruction, Tyre will be forgotten for 70 years, the lifespan of one king. Now, what does that mean? Well, first of all, we need to look at the translation king, the life of one king. John Gill says it doesn't mean king, it means the family of the king, the dynasty of a king. His family, himself, his son, his son's sons are here meant. Clark and Barnes say that the days of one king is a kingdom, the days of a kingdom. So king here means a dynasty, the king and his sons. Jameson Fawcett and Brown says that dynasty includes, the dynasty of Babylon includes Nebuchadnezzar, his son Evil-Merodach, and his grandson Belshazzar, who formed the whole dynasty. All right, so we're going to take that as being true. So now, how is Tyre forgotten for 70 years? Well, the dynasty of the Babylonians, the Babylonian Empire, lasted for 70 years if you start from Assyria's fall to Babylon's fall. In other words, Babylonians' sole rule in the Near East lasted for 70 years. Assyria fell in 609 at the Battle of Haran when Babylonia beat them and ended Assyria, and we'll assume that's when Babylon starts ruling solely. And then, of course, Babylon fell to Persia in 539. Well, 609 to 539 is 70 years. And so, after the 70 years were over, in 539, Cyrus the Persian takes over. He's very tolerant. He lets Tyre get back on its feet, and so Tyre is remembered and gets back to its trade. Now, there is a problem with that. The Babylonians did not besiege Tyre for the whole 70 years. They started in 586, and so after 70 years would be in 516, not 539 BC. So let's look at three options that we might employ to solve this 70 years problem. Option number one, and this is the option I prefer, the Babylonian Empire lasted for 70 years from Assyria's fall, which was 609 at the Battle of Haran, to Babylon's fall to Persia in 539. That's 70 years. And it's at the end of that 70-year period that Tyre will wake up and be restored to her former prominence. Now, here are some commentators who hold to this. Colin Delitzsch, Albert Barnes. Barnes quotes some other commentators of his era, Lauth, Newton, Vitringa, Aben Ezra, Rosenmuller. So a lot of people have held to this view. There's a problem. The Babylonians did not start the siege of Tyre in 609 at the beginning of the 70-year period of Nebuchadnezzar II, or I shouldn't say Nebuchadnezzar II, of the Babylonian Empire during its sole rule over Assyria, starting with Nebuchadnezzar II and ending with the last ruler, Nabonidus, in 539. Tyre was besieged by Babylon in 586, and Babylon went down to the Persians in 539. Well, that's not 70 years. That's more like 47 years. Now, Ellicott, who does not hold to this view that it's a literal 70 years from 609 to 539, he says it is absurd to count the 70 years of the present passage, as some do, and I've mentioned a lot of those sums, as some do, from the accession of Nebuchadnezzar, 609, to the death of Nabonidus, 539. For neither did Tyre begin to be forgotten in the first year of the one prince, 609, nor did she immediately recover herself on the death of the other in 539. Well, here's how Barnes answers that problem. First of all, we know from Jeremiah that Babylon had conquered a set of nations surrounding Israel in 609 BC. We start by reading Jeremiah 25, verse 9. Jeremiah says, putting God's words in his mouth, "I am going to send for all the families of the north. This is the Lord's instruction. And send for my servant Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and I will bring them, the people of the north and Nebuchadnezzar, against this land of Judah, against its residents, and against all these surrounding nations." In other words, the whole ancient Near East. "And I will completely destroy them and make them a desolation, a derision, and ruins forever." So Nebuchadnezzar started out pretty fast destroying people. And by the way, Nebuchadnezzar didn't take over sole rule of Babylon to 605 when his father Nabopolassar died, but in 609 he was the number one general. At any rate, he came down there, wiped out all the lands, and then in Jeremiah 25:11, two verses later, Jeremiah says, "This whole land will become a desolate ruin, and these nations will serve the king of Babylon for 70 years. And so even though the siege of Babylon started it in 586, the service of Tyre to Babylon, because Babylon was a member of those set of nations subjugated by Babylon, the service of Babylon started in 609 BC, and so there is a 70-year period where Tyre is forgotten. By the way, this is the same 70 years that Jeremiah has predicted as being the time of the exile of the Jews, famous 70-year period. So Isaiah was using this number to show when Babylon's dominion was over. And I would imagine since all the nations around Tyre were ruled by Babylon, starting in 609 BC, Tyre would be literally forgotten politically by other nations during the 70-year period. So essentially, this option takes the 70 years literally, but does not begin the 70 years with the siege of Tyre in 586, but starts with the conquering of all the land around Tyre in 609, which of course would mess up Tyre's trade big time. Other commentators don't like that option. They say that the 70 years is symbolic. The pulpit commentary takes the 70 years as symbolic. The pulpit commentator gives evidence for how 70 is often taken symbolically in the scriptures, saying this: 70 years is one of the two chief numbers used for an indefinite time, 40 being the other. And that commentary gives some examples in the scriptures of 70 being symbolic. Exodus 24:9, "Then went up Moses and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel." Although I don't know if that's symbolic. It could have been literally 70 elders. They might have chosen 70 elders because of the symbolic import of the number. Genesis 4:24, "If Cain shall be avenged sevenfold, truly Lamech 70 and sevenfold." 70 there is a part of 77. Matthew 18:22, Jesus says, "I tell you, not as many as seven times shall you forgive the one who offended you," Jesus said to him, "but 70 times seven." Exodus 15:27, "Then they came," the Israelites on the Exodus, "came to Elim, where there were 12 springs of water and 70 date palms, and they camped there by the waters." That sounds literal to me, although they could have rounded off at 70, maybe not realizing that there was a spiritual significance to the number. Maybe they did. I don't know. Judges 1:7, Adonibezek said, "70 kings with their thumbs and big toes cut off used to pick up scraps under my table. God has repaid me for what I have done." They brought him to Jerusalem and he died there. So Adonibezek said 70 kings used to sit under his table. That does sound like a rounded off symbolic number, meaning a lot. But my problem with taking the 70 as symbolic is this. A couple problems. First of all, 70 is symbolic of what? A long time. Ellicott says, quote, "a symbolic number for a long period of indefinite duration." Okay. But you know what the problem with that is? The historical subjugation of Tyre, starting in 586 and ending in 539, is only 47 years. Now you've got the symbol that's longer than the historical period. Now, of course, Ellicott believes it's Assyria that came in to mash Tyre, not Babylon, so that would not be a problem for him. He just says that Assyria did this for a long time. I don't know. That seems a little bit loose to me. Now, Benson, the commentator, has a third option to solve the problem. He says you calculate the 70 years from the end of the siege. The siege started in 586, 13 years later, you're at 573, says Benson, and then you subtract the 70 years, you get down to 503, Benson, and he says this is the time of the Ionian Revolt, where the Greek colonies on the western shore of Asia Minor, present-day Turkey, they rebelled against Darius I. That's a famous at least is famous for ancient church historians, is called the Ionian Revolt, and says, Benson and Tyre helped Darius by providing ships, and we can presume from that that Darius lifted restrictions on Tyre after that period. Well, the problem with that is, why would not Cyrus, when he wiped out Babylon, why wouldn't he lift the restrictions on Tyre right then? Also, the bigger problem is the Ionian Revolt was not in 503. It was in 499 to 494, as the Encyclopedia Britannica says. So we're going to toss that option. Continuing on in the middle of verse 15, Isaiah says at the end of the 70 years, what the song says about the prostitute will happen to Tyre. The song is being spoken of here. Here's what John Gill says concerning that. Being rebuilt and restored to its former state as a harlot who has been cast off by her lovers on account of some disease she has labored under, and through a dislike of her, but having recovered her health, makes use of her arts, and this among others, to sing a song, in order to draw by her melodious voice her lovers to her again. And so Tyre, being built again and out of the hands of its oppressors and restored to its former liberty, should make use of all arts and methods to recover her trade and draw merchants from all parts to her again. Well, to put a little shorter than Gill, Tyre was like a prostitute. She'd been rejected. Nobody went to her anymore. She wants some more customers. And so now that she's been set loose by Persia, she's willing to go out and get some more customers. Of course, that means more commercial trade on the Mediterranean Sea. In verse 16, Tyre is said, like a prostitute, to pick up her lyre, stroll through the city, prostitute forgotten by men. She's looking for new customers, so not only is she singing, she's walking through the city and playing her little guitar-like instrument, the lyre, with soft, dulcet music. Play skillfully, says Isaiah. Sing many a song, and you will be thought of again. In other words, you'll get some more customers, you whore. Tyre. Now, this is interesting. Isaiah is saying, well, the bad news is over for Tyre, but then when the bad times are over, then Tyre's going to go back to the good times, but the good times are illicit. The implication is that Tyre, a pagan city, is going to be piling up money for ungodly ends, which most people do when they don't know God. They try to make money. Verse 17, at the end of the 70 years, the Lord will restore Tyre, and she will go back into business. And again, we're saying that's probably 539 when Cyrus knocked off the Babylonians and the nations that were formerly under the yoke of the Babylonians were set free, and Tyre was one of those nations. She, Tyre, will go back into business, prostituting herself with all the kingdoms of the world on the face of the earth. So Isaiah is saying that Tyre's trade with the world was by using illicit, immoral means. Well, it could be immoral means, or it could be immoral ends. It could be the trade was perfectly honorable, but the money that was gained therefrom was used in building idols. We go to the last verse in Isaiah 23, and we will thank the Lord be finished with this chapter. This is one of the hardest chapters I've dealt with in this whole Old Testament podcast. Isaiah continues, but her, that's Tyre's, profits and wages will be dedicated to the Lord. They will not be stored or saved, for her profit will go to those who live in the Lord's presence, to provide them with ample food and sacred clothing. So as we said earlier, Tyre's profits were restored after Babylon was destroyed by Persia, but these illicit profits that she had gotten, behaving like a commercial whore, these profits will be dedicated to the Lord. Now, what does that mean? Gill and Benson say that this dedication of the prophets of Tyre to the Lord refers metaphorically to the eventual conversion of Tyre under the Messiah. Now, the Cambridge commentary denies that outright. But supporting Gill and Benson, we can read Psalms 45:12. The daughter of Tyre will come with a gift. Daughter of Tyre means the population of Tyre will come with a gift. Men of wealth will seek your favor. They're bringing gifts to Isaiah that, by this option, takes symbolically these gifts as saying, we're coming because we believe in you now. Psalms 87:4 says this, I will record Rahab in Babylon among those who acknowledge me, Philistia 2, and Tyre, and Tyre, and Tyre. Those who acknowledge me, Philistia and Tyre, along with Cush, Ethiopia, and they will say this one was born in Zion. So basically, Psalms is talking about the conversion of the pagan neighbors of Israel. Now, if this is true, when was this conversion to Yahweh accomplished? Well, here are some examples of how this was accomplished in the times of the Messiah. In Matthew 15:21, Jesus visited Tyre and Sidon. You recall that time when he went to see the Syrophoenician woman. And later on, in the times of the apostles, we read in Acts 11:19. Now those who had been scattered by the persecution in connection with Stephen traveled as far as Phoenicia. Phoenicia, of course, is where Tyre and Sidon are, telling the message only to Jews. So the gospel went out to Tyre in Acts 11. In Acts 21, we read this. This is Luke speaking. After sighting Cyprus and passing to the south of it, we sailed on to Syria. This is coming back toward Jerusalem, going from west to east. They passed to the south of Cyprus at the end of the third journey. They sailed on to Syria, and right south of Syria, we landed at Tyre. Finding the disciples there, we stayed with them 7 days. So there were already people believing in Jesus at Tyre. Getting past the times of the biblical church, getting into the times of early church history, times referred to by Adam Clark, whose comment I'll read right now, quote, Tyre, after its destruction by Nebuchadnezzar, recovered, as it is here foretold, its ancient trade, wealth, and grandeur, as it did likewise after a second destruction by Alexander. It became Christian early with the rest of the neighboring countries. St. Paul himself found many Christians there in Acts 21:4. I just read that to you. Tyre suffered much in the Diocletian persecution that was at the end of the 3rd century A.D. It was an archbishopric under the Patriarchate of Jerusalem with 14 bishoprics under its jurisdiction. That's a lot of bishoprics, a lot of Christians in Tyre. It continued Christian until it was taken by the Saracens, that's the Muslims, in 639. It was recovered by the Christians in 1124, but in 1280 it was conquered by the Mamelukes, that's a version of the Muslims, and afterwards taken from them by the Turks in 1517. Since that time it has sunk into utter decay, is now a mere ruin, a bare rock, a place to spread nets upon, as the prophet Ezekiel foretold it would be. I can't wait to get to that prophecy in Ezekiel. But we see that Tyre really did turn to the Lord for a long time. It ended up being destroyed. I think that's reasonable to say that's what Isaiah is referring to here. Sort of a symbol. Tyre's taking his money and buying sacred clothing. That's clothing for priests. Go to those who live in the Lord's presence. Would that be priests who are serving God to provide the priests with ample food and sacred clothing? That's what it sounds like. And of course, we know that in the New Testament, we are all priests of Yahweh. Gillen Barnes says that the prophet of the Tyrians was to go for the maintenance of gospel workers and the poor, which of course, once Christianity spread through Tyre, that's exactly what's going to be happening. The Tyrians are going to start giving their money to Christians, Christian workers. That's one option. Another option is to say that the prophet is going to go to the citizens of Jerusalem, who were defined in Tyre their chief resource both for food and raiment. That's Ellicott's view. He takes it a little bit less sublimely and says this is literal profit to those who live in the Lord's presence. Those are just the citizens of Jerusalem. Sacred clothing, though? I mean, sacred clothing? Why would the citizens of Jerusalem be wearing sacred clothing? Here is a third option, an option that makes the fulfillment of the prophecy that the Tyrian's prophet would go to Yahweh. This option says that this prophet will go to the erection of the second temple, which of course happened after the return from the exile, 520 to 515 BC is when they built that temple. To back that up, we can read in Ezra 3:7, they gave money to the stonecutters and artisan and gave food, drink, and oil to the people of Sidon and Tyre, the Jews did, so that they, Sidon and Tyre, could bring cedar wood from Lebanon to Joppa by the sea, according to the authorization given them by King Cyrus of Persia. That doesn't sound like profits to me. That sounds like a business transaction. The people of Tyre says, we'll give you some cedar if you give us some money. No, I think it's for the maintenance of gospel workers and the poor, as Gill and Barnes say. That's where the prophets of the Tyrians went in the New Covenant. That's my humble opinion. Ladies and gentlemen, we are now finished with this terribly difficult chapter. I don't want to complain, but it's like to destroy me. It took me 2 days instead of 1 day to get through my notes and to revise and to ponder and to look at other commentaries. And I do not claim to have the last word on it by any means, but I hope this will help you if you have the gumption to try to understand what Isaiah's prophecy was about here in chapter 23. I have actually enjoyed it. I don't want to complain. I think it's been great fun. So I hope you stay tuned for our next trip into Isaiah 24, which we will call an oracle concerning everybody. He's going to finish up his hellfire and brimstone prophecies against everybody. I hope you stay tuned for that happy occasion, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.